Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest. There's something so thrilling about playing Chumba Casino. Maybe it's the simple reminder that with a little luck, anything is possible. ChumbaCasino.com has hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new game releases each week. Play for free anytime, anywhere for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, heretics and shining crazy diamonds, are you ready for some Jungian shadow work? Help you integrate the dark parts of you so that you can get closer to that sweet experience of gnosis? Well, get ready for this video I am about to show you. And the video, I was going to put it out later, but you're getting it now. And that is with Colin, where he provides amazing shadow work exercises, plus tips on how to survive these Gnostic times, this Philip K. Dick world, and this Age of Hermes. And it happened in our Finding Hermes private meeting. That's the bi-monthly or twice a month meeting where we have a Q&A and there are exclusive presentations on stuffy stuff like Jungian active imagination exercises, finding spiritual truths that you can use in the Gospel of Thomas, my adventures in the Ayahuasca Santo Daime Church, and so forth. And the reason Colin did it in the Finding Hermes group is that he was on the main podcast about a month ago or so, and we sort of ran out of time, and he didn't provide his very cool exercises. So I invited him to the group so he could show the world this amazing gnosis, these revelations. Now, I did mention that I'm putting this out early. I was going to wait a little bit longer, you know, promotions and join the Finding Hermes group and all that other stuff. And then I realized everybody is going crazy. Everybody's losing their minds for the most part, specifically about the election cycle, the upcoming election, all the happenings in our geopolitical world. Man, people are freaking out. They are stressed. So I said to myself, self, let's put this out as soon as possible. And I jumped on the camera and here we are. You're going to get it early and you're going to find that it is very useful because integrating your shadow, getting closer to individuation really solves a lot of problems and gives you a sense of perspective and purpose in the wider world, even if the world is falling apart around you. And it is interesting, as I was thinking too, yes, I actually do think once in a while, that in a lot of countries like France and others, you are, by law, you don't start your election cycle or season like 2 months before people actually go and vote. So for example, 2 months, only 2 months are candidates allowed to campaign, put ads, go on debates, do rallies, reach out to potential voters and all that. But not here in the United States. It is like a forever election cycle. It's like a freaking Ouroboros. It just goes on and on. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with the election, who gets elected. We might not find out for a long time. Maybe it's the last presidential election. I don't know. And even if it were, let's face it, around December and January, you'll have those yahoos going, oh, we got to get ready for the midterm elections. We got to get ready for the midterm elections. And here we go again. Round and round we go, Jack, in the Ouroboros. You know, it's always the most important election of our lifetime. It's almost like this is by design because it keeps the population in a constant state of stress and anxiety. And it's definitely part of the Archon black magic of divide and conquer. Keep us always breaking apart and fragmented and at each other's throats. And I think it's gotta stop, or we gotta see it for what it is. Because the truth is that the election, politics, the government, it's not real. It's a fiction. It's a narrative we told ourselves and we give energy to make real. In other words, we are creating egregores. And yes, egregores certainly have real life effects. But when we understand it that way, that these are illusions, that we are feeding these thought forms, then we can provide better energy for them. And if you don't like the real life effects of these egregores, you'll find the information to make sure you don't get hit by these forces. So it's an illusion, and I don't want you to get too caught up in the illusion. I want you to be free. It's a narrative. It's a story we told ourselves collectively and we feed into. But if you want to buy into the story, that's up to you. Go ahead. Do what you want. You do you, as they say. As Philip K. Dick said, more accurately, to fight the empire is to be infected with its derangement. But if you want to play it, I remember Lisa Murawski, who was on our show about 2 months ago. She said that politics is an eternal game. It never ends. Back to the Ouroboros. Sure, there are highs and lows and heartbreaking moments and moments of pure euphoria and small pauses, certainly very small pauses here in the United States. But it is endless. And when you see it as that kind of game, then you can choose if you want to do this marathon and at least know that, yes, you'll be up one day and you'll be down one day. And that's just the way this game is, this eternal game. It's kind of like when you support a sports team and, you know, I suspend my disbelief to enjoy the Chicago Bears. I fall into that story, that narrative. And yes, there are moments of great joy, but for the most part, it's a lot of disappointing moments, getting ready for the next season, peaks and valleys and all that, and it's an eternal game. But it's still a game. It's still a narrative. It's still a story that we tell ourselves. When I was a New Ager, I used to have a favorite sort of fridge magnet spirituality bromide, and it went, anything divided by infinity is zero. Anything divided by infinity is zero. And yes, don't get mathematically pedantic on me. The point is that this saying brought a lot of comfort to me, because I realized I was focusing on what didn't exist, what was temporal, what comes and goes, instead of keeping my eye on the timeless, the eternal, the infinite, the true infinite. And that's where I found value and energy and comfort to be able to deal with, yes, the temporal, the material, and so forth. So keep that in mind, because part of you is infinite. It resides within you, and you have the power and the purpose to make a difference and find out what your holy quest is in this illusionary game, which usually entails waking other people up and helping others to find their own path and stop their pain. But I don't want you to be in pain. I don't want you to have anxiety. You are amazing. Yes, as I'll keep saying, you have a purpose, and it's an amazing purpose. Don't let the egregores and the illusions sweep you away into, well, the continued Ouroboros. As I say on this show often, we are way past the point of voting our way out of any problem. We're done with that. It's too late. We are way past the point of posting on social media and the internet for some tikkun olam. We are way past the point of marching or going to rallies to somehow fix this broken empire and affecting the egregores. The only solution is a spiritual solution, or a psycho-spiritual solution. The only solution is that both as individuals and and as a collective, as a society, we have an alchemical transformation that we may reach, well, the best version of ourselves, the truer version, our individuated version, which is something Colin will give you plenty of good red pill suppositories in the coming video. So keep calm and have gnosis. Fear is the mind killer. You have so much potential, and as I'll keep saying, you have a purpose, but you've got to find your inner self. You got to go in the inner journey, and you got to look through all the chimeras that are being put in front of you that somehow your ego thought they were real or even meaningful. It's all temporal. As Julian of Norwich said, and I like to keep quoting, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. And if I'm wrong, well, I'll see you in the gulag very soon. But I do hope they still allow me to do my podcast from there. We shall see. It doesn't matter. Integrate your shadow, stop projecting out into the world, and things will get much better very soon. Enjoy. So let's get started. First of all, Colin, officially welcome to the Finding Hermes group meeting.
Well, thank you for having me, Miguel. It's a pleasure, and I'm honored and appreciative, and I can't wait to talk to you guys about anything you want to hear about in regards to shadow work. I'll share with you what I've been doing and what I do with my partner, Melissa, and what I do with my clients and whatever I can do. So. Have at it.
Well, tell us, what do you do? What is your gig or your system that you do with the Melissa?
Oh, well, okay. Is there a system? Well, you know, my inner manager wants to create a system, of course. but every time you try to create a system, nature doesn't want that to happen probably the way you want it to. But the best I could do, I put in the last book, Transforming Darkness, that we talked about last time we talked, and that would be in the second to last chapter, which is the shadow work practices chapter. And so the way I organized it in the book actually was, I think, kind of novel. It's something I've been working on for a while. I took Ken Wilber's four quadrant model, where he has this. I don't know if we should go into it or not, but basically, it's four different ways of perceiving anything in the world. And so you have first person, second person, third person, and third person plural. And so that kind of translates into mind, culture, body, and civilization. And so then I basically gave the reader a bunch of shadow work practices for each of those quadrants. Most of the time when we're talking about shadow work, we're talking about personal shadow work. We're talking about doing it alone or doing it perhaps with a partner. In this case, I did that. And then I also talked about cultural shadow work. And I talked about, you know, how basically health and health awareness is bodily shadow work, and societal or civilizational shadow work is basically becoming first noticing how you, when you interface, how you are being parasitic or shadowy in the way that you plug in with society. And so then I gave some suggestions there. So that's kind of how I organized it or systematized it. But then you, the reader, are free to, you know, pick it apart and, you know, do these practices any way you want to. And, you know, it's like also with alchemy, when you say, oh, okay, it's alchemy, you know, this is shadow work is part of alchemy, and individuation and development is alchemy. And so there are stages of alchemy, and here's the stages, and it's, you know, negrito, albedo, rubedo, or however you want to describe it. And then you actually start doing it and you really get involved in it and go deep in it. And you find it doesn't go in that order, you know, so, But shadow work is, a lot of it is the, you know, it's the Negrito, or it's how to get out of the Negrito, kind of. I would say, though, I kind of probably, if it, using the book for notes here, I would say that the first thing that we're doing with shadow work is we're basically just becoming aware of our inner state. We're becoming aware of our, of everything, you know, everything that's going on in our consciousness. We're becoming aware of our thoughts. We're becoming aware of our mood swings, our, you know, changes in our moods. We're becoming aware of our dreams. We're becoming aware of our, you know, when we're communicating with other people, like I'm communicating with you now, but I'm also watching myself communicate. I'm listening to myself communicate. I'm judging my own communication and what's behind it and the energy that I'm putting out. And so I'm just becoming ultra aware of myself, my behavior, my thought processes, my whole emotional balance and all of that. And then I'm doing that in relationship with other people too. And so this is just self-awareness, it's mindfulness. It can also be coupled with meditation practice of some kind. And basically, that's kind of where all inner work begins. It begins with raising your awareness of what's going on inside of yourself. And then as you do that, inevitably, you find dark stuff. You know, you find negative thoughts. You find projections. You find, you know, judgments about other people, judgments about yourself. Old memories from childhood where you were hurt, you know, or you have leftover residual emotional pain, you know, you find that. You find archetypal stuff, you know, you find, you can find demonic stuff. You can find all kinds of dark, shadowy stuff in your psyche once you start to turn your focus around and just start becoming continually aware of what's going on inside of me. And I know that some people, you know, in a lot of spiritual practices, people will, they will, you know, they'll be meditating or whatever, and something dark will come up, and then they'll try to get away from it. They'll try to do a mantra. Right. Or some kind of a practice to dissociate away from that or whatever. And that's not what we're doing when we're doing shadow work. We're saying, okay, I have dark stuff in me. I have a shadow. I have primal material. I have wounded stuff in me. And let's see it. Let's get to it. Let's get it up on the table. Let's see what we got here. Let's trace it back. Let's figure out what it's doing. Is it autonomous? What's it connected to? What inspired it in the first place? Is it something left over? Is it from me, from my childhood? Is it from my parents? Is it something from my culture? You know, and we're basically becoming investigators of our own, not just our psyche, but our own darkness in however that manifests. And so that means that we have to become tolerant to being uncomfortable. You know, and we have to become, in terms of doing this with other people, with your spouse, with your partner, you know, you're going to be, as you start investigating all this shadow material, you're going to start finding how it's been an active, some of this material has been actively creating conflict in your relationship. And then you're going to be looking at that, and you're going to be, you know, with, you're going to have to, your partner is going to have to be aware of what's going on too. And they're going to be looking at their shadow stuff, and you're going to be becoming aware of how you trigger each other and what's behind that. And why do we trigger each other? And do we have unconscious parts that are getting basically fed on this? Are we addicted to conflict? Or what parts of us are addicted to conflict? And just like the way I'm speaking here is I'm just kind of, you know, taking you through all this kind of, in this whole investigatory attitude that you take on. So that's basically kind of the, I guess, the whole context to start you know, what is shadow work and how do you do it and all that. That kind of, I think maybe that kind of introduced it, hopefully.
Yeah, no, good job. And for the audience, again, please check out our last interview. We don't want to go again and start defining shadow and comp. We did such a good job. It's right there on all the video podcasts and all that. But if you were somebody wants to start working on their shadow, Colin, and they want to start today and they want to take those baby steps, what are like the four exercises you would tell?
Of course,
would say, I know Jung would probably say dream journaling and active imagination. I mean, I'm assuming that's what he would say, but what are some other, where do people start?
Well, if somebody came to me and they said, I want to do shadow work, I would say, why? You know, what's going on?
You've just begun the process, right?
Right. I'd say, well, what's going on? You know, how are you suffering right now? What made it so that you think that you need to do shadow work? Where'd you hear about that? What do you think it is? You know, and I would, you know, try to investigate that a little bit and see where they're at with it. But let me, if you want four practices here, you want to kind of get it down to four. The first thing we'll say is that exactly what I said originally, start becoming mindful of what's going on inside of you and how that your start to become aware of the fact that your psyche is a multiplicity,
right,
and that there are different parts of you that get active at different times. And depending on what's going on in the environment and other processes we don't understand, but you're not always the same you. You're not always the same. You're not always the same balance that, you know, of energies, of moods. And so start to become aware of those things. Start to become aware of the autonomous thoughts that are just kind of running. And what is the, you know, you'll have thoughts that'll be about, okay, all the things I have to do, and I, you know, I have these appointments and all that kind of stuff. And so that'll be kind of one category of things. And then you'll, you know, have to interface with your boss or whatever it is. And then that will trigger kind of another category of thoughts and feelings because of the way of your relationship with them. And maybe it's good or maybe it's bad. But you basically just start to take an accounting, a basic accounting of what, you know, what's going on in me. And kind of just start to become familiar with your own kind of repertoire of, or, you know, what's in the jukebox. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's going, you know, what do you usually play? Because it's usually the same kind of playlist. There's a playlist that's going on. What's in your playlist? So that's the first thing. And recognize that it's not all you. Like Colin isn't just Colin. Colin has all kinds of subparts, and some of them are strong, and when activated or triggered, they will come up and take over Colin, and that's another part. That's another part of us. So start to realize that these aren't just all you. These are parts of you, and you have sort of an inner family. Now, the way I just said that, that's IFS, inner family systems therapy. And I think that's very useful to kind of just, even if you don't study that system, just recognize that you have there's a whole multiplicity. The psyche is a multiplicity.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's it. So just becoming mindful, becoming aware, becoming just kind of learning about your inner playlist, let's call it for right now. And that's just for the rest of your life. That's just the way it is. And you know, know thyself, right? That's how you're doing it, right? That's how you're coming to know thyself. Study your projections. So let's make that number two then. So your projections are every time you are quote unquote triggered, right? Every time you see or experience something in the external world that gets you negatively charged, you can get positively charged too. Like you can idolize someone and you can have what we call a golden shadow projection. But just usually we're talking about negative content. So you see Donald Trump or you see Kamala Harris or you see, you know, whoever out there that triggers you. And then that invokes a feeling, you get emotionally charged, you know, and then you want to type, you know, vigorously on the keyboard to whoever and get into an argument or get into an argument with your neighbor or whatever it is. And however, you know, you get triggered. People understand what that means these days. That word is common now. And so when you're triggered, just realize that whatever triggers you is not the actual person or thing out there. I mean, that is the trigger. That is the triggering agent. But the reason why you're triggered is not because of them, because that same person, let's say it's a person that triggers you, doesn't trigger everybody, right? It triggers you, maybe triggers some other people you know, but it doesn't trigger everybody. So that means there's a subjective perceptual factor here. It's subjective. It's something about your programming. It's something about how you're perceiving that other person that's making you negatively charged. So ask yourself why. What is it about that person? Could be an event, you know, it could be, you know, an event or anything in the external world, but it's usually a person. What is it about that person that's triggering me? And go, oh, well, you know, he reminds me of my father and I have a bad relationship with my father. Okay, great. You know, that's a common one right there. Or my mother and I have a whatever relationship with my mother, or reminds me of, just reminds me, you have to trace it back and you have to go, okay, reminds me of this from high school, or reminds me of whatever else it is. But then you get to another level and you realize, well, that thing about him that's triggering me is actually, you basically ask yourself, do I have that in me? Do I have what he has, which I despise about him? Do I have that trait in me? Was that trait in my parents? Was that trait in my upbringing? Do I have that trait? Have I been working maybe to try to repress that trait and try to not express that trait because I find it so ugly? You know, if that person is vain or that person is selfish or that person is, you know, appears narcissistic or whatever it is, or greedy or whatever, you trace that back to yourself and you go, okay, well, maybe I have some of what he has or whoever it is. And then you have to kind of stomach it and you have to go, yeah, well, actually, I kind of do have that. And you have to admit to it. And then further, you have to kind of trace it down. And so I'd say that's kind of the next step and the next practice, is that noticing your projections is kind of the first step in this. And every time you're charged, every time you're triggered, recognizing that the reason why you're triggered is because of a reactive relationship between what you perceive in them and something that you have shoved down into your own unconscious. And we kind of talked about that more, but I could kind of talk more about kind of the sort of physics of that. But that's the first step, just noticing, okay, I'm not triggered because of the person. I'm triggered because of a relationship conflict between my perception of the person and something that I've shoved down, that aspect that I've shoved down. That wasn't very well described, but you get my point, I think. And then the next step is to actually emotionally process the energy that's down there, right? So once you go, okay, I'm triggered, that person triggers me, that behavior triggers me, I kind of realize I kind of am or have been like that myself in the past, or one of my parents is like that, and I really don't like that, and I'm really charged over that. That's the first part. And then you have to go, okay, now let me go trace that feeling that I'm having down, and let me sit with that feeling, and let me allow that feeling to rise up and be within my experience. And instead of what most people will do is once they're triggered, they will react to displace the energy, the repressed energy, or they will distract to try to shove it back down, you know, watch TV, watch a movie, do some exercise, smoke a joint, you know, drink some wine, whatever it is to try to kind of pacify the situation. But then this practice, you basically go, no, I'm triggered and I'm going to go sit with it. And then you allow the fullness of that emotional content to come up into consciousness and allow yourself to experience fully the emotion. And so it might make you cry. It might make you angry at first. And then below the anger, it might be sadness or grief or something, some other emotion. So you're going to have to just sit with those things. And that's how you actually start to assimilate or integrate the actual emotional content that's below the perceptual trigger, because that's where the real energy of the trigger is. It's not in the perception part. It's lower. It's in the limbic system part. It's below that. So study your mind, study your inner state of being, document what you find that's dark, study your projections, trace them back, and then emotionally process the energy that's behind them. So that could be three, right? You wanted four. And then, I'm just kind of going through the shadow work practices chapter here.
Yeah, I was reading. Yeah, I read the practices today. I mean, I think you really just gave the steps. And again, yeah. Colin gives options. Of course, I would always tell people meditation and contemplation. Again, the self-knowledge part and the calming you down is part. But Colin talks about art as shadow work. So yeah, you're happy in your drawing, you know, you decapitating your boss. It might mean the shadow is out, right? So you got to look at that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's in there. Art as shadow work. Yeah, turning whatever dark you find in there into art, into some kind of artistic expression. Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got dream journaling, different
types. Dream journaling's in there. Yeah, part of doing inner work, period, is dream journaling. You got to keep a dream journal. It's good to keep a journal in general, but have a dream journal.
Yeah, I think you need to write down everything. Your feelings, I mean, even your synchronicities, just journaling is like a form of magic that brings it all out. And
yeah, it does. It integrates it.
Yeah, you're not going to defeat your shadow. It's always going to be there. You can integrate it by dialoguing with it and understanding it. I think that's it. And it's, I'm saying easier said than done, but it really is, it really does work.
It does work. It's a practice. It's a lifelong practice. It just becomes part of your way of life. Right. And then you slowly develop and mature through it. If you don't do this, if you don't have some kind of toolkit for processing, for doing shadow work, then basically your whole life is kind of, you go in this direction and then you run into your own shadow, you know, in someone else or in some occurrence, and then you have to run away and you have to go over here and then you run into it again over here, and then you run into it again over here, and then you just build up this story of how, you know, he screwed me over, then she screwed me over, and then this happened, and then this tragic thing happened, and then that, it becomes this sort of your sort of shadow fate story. Instead of going, oh, okay, I'm running into my own unconscious darkness being projected into the world, and let me deal with this now. And if you do that, each time you deal with it, it's a little mini initiation, and then you actually mature. You physiologically, developmentally mature through that. Mm-hmm. I think our whole society is artificially immature, not artificially, but needlessly, or what word am I looking for? We don't have to be, we could be more developed than we are.
Right.
And a lot of this, Miguel, you mentioned something about clown world. A lot of clown world is the fact that we are, actually, I want to talk to you about this before we go, because I thinking on that. But it's kind of remember the Jung's quote about the definition of mental illness is the refusal to accept legitimate suffering?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does that mean? The refusal to accept legitimate suffering. In other words, it's like, you know, the Buddhist maxim, the truth of dukkha or whatever, you know, life, suffering is part of life, right? And you're constantly going to cycle in and out of suffering. And if you have no means for dealing with it, or the means you have are just not adequate, and then you decide to distract, you decide to try to do whatever kind of method, take drugs or whatever it is to try to shove that down and try to not experience that suffering, well, then that just stacks up and makes you crazy, and you just psychically split apart. Right. You just become schizophrenic, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. So I think we're a society that's becoming schizophrenic because we've been avoiding our darkness. We've been exporting it and projecting it and repressing it, and now it's ripping us apart.
Yeah, you're right. It's so obvious. I mean, the visceral hate towards our candidates, who are just puppets in the end. Just to tell us, there's major projection. I mean, I've never heard the word Hitler and communist. Both sides abuse it, throw it around it's so obvious. And yeah, we're just teetering towards a collective insanity. Well, we're already there, but we're, like you said, downright schizophrenic fragmentation of our psyche. And you just have to step back. Yeah.
Well, now that we're on it, I might as well just tell you what I was going to say. I was kind of thinking about, you know, you mentioned it in the email, you know, let's touch on clown world for a second. And I had to think about, okay, well, what is clown world? I mean, I kind of know, of course I know what you mean, but well, what is it actually psychologically, you know, what, or sociologically, what is clown world? What's going on here? And I kind of just kind of let that gestate for a couple days. And then what popped into my mind was liminal space. Mm-hmm. You know what liminal space is? That the bardo, the middle, it's from rites of passage. It's, you know, cultural anthropology, where it's that space where you've left your old identity and you haven't adopted your new identity yet. And you're kind of in the middle. You're in that kind of Negrito period, and it kind of came out of anthropologists studying primitive societies that do these adolescent rites of passage, but then it got adopted into where it can now be used to describe societies as organisms in their own development. So I think we're kind of in that purgatory. We're in that kind of liminal space where everything falls apart and we dissociate and fragment and nothing makes sense anymore. And remember what Joseph Campbell said about how when once we, you know, we're losing our myth and it's going to be chaos until we get a new myth.
Right.
And so we're in that space right now. And it really, you know, the people who can avoid that are the people who are self-directed, like big S self-directed. Those people we're not falling apart. We're just looking at it going, man, you people are crazy. But most people, it turns out, we're finding out through this that most people really need to be, I guess you could say, hierarchically, you know, directed in life. They need to be provided myth and ethics and laws, and they, you know, here's, you know, if you have these talents, here's the career for you, you know, go in this direction. They need to be kind of, that's kind of just what seems like a great deal of people are need that. And when you have too many options, or when the options don't work anymore, or when the trust falls out of the whole thing and it just falls apart for 1,000 reasons, well, then everybody falls apart with it. And so I kind of say that's kind of my answer for clown world.
No.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
That's brilliantly said. I think that's a solution. We need a new myth. You just mentioned it too about the Bardos. Whatever reason, the Archons have removed all the initiatory traditions in this country. That's why Jordan Peterson and, God forbid, Andrew Tate are so popular. Others,
right?
Not initiating our men and women, which is, again, that's that shadow. You die, you are reborn into a new group, and you understand how to do it. That becomes your life. So we've lost that, and that's why those two reasons is why we are falling apart as a nation. So,
Well, you know, I wrote, Miguel, that in this book, I called this a shadow work toolkit for the red-pilled initiate.
Right.
Because basically, I believe that the whole red pill awakening, where you sort of become aware of the cultural shadow, is a true initiation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell you, when I found out that 9/11 was an inside job. You know, I was actually looking at Fox News for a few years, and I always thought, you know, George Bush was kind of a moron, but I was trying to figure out what my political orientation was. It was kind of libertarian or whatever, but I was kind of looking at that and all that, and I believed the story about, you know, the Bin Laden in a cave and the 19 hijackers and everything. Just the buildings fell, and all. I just kind of went along with it, and then I saw a documentary that kind of broke it all apart. And whether it was fully true or not, I realized this was a scam. They scammed us with this. Mm-hmm. And that just was such a shock. It just totally, you know, blew out all four tires. And then I just went into just years of research and all of this and just going down the rabbit hole and figure out what's true, what's not true. And then I ran into all the conspiracies and all of this, and I had to kind of learn how to navigate the rabbit hole and learn to discern. You have to learn discernment down there and kind of come out on the other side with some kind of a worldview that takes in. It's very weird and difficult to have come out and go, oh, here's my worldview now. I used to believe that the news was true and what was in the newspaper or whatever was basically true. Maybe it was slanted this direction or that or whatever. But now I realize that our government and our society is to a great degree run by a bunch of psychopaths who are constantly lying to us and manipulating us and mind controlling us. And then I have to somehow incorporate that into my worldview. And then at the same time, back off and go, but wait a minute, I'm not living in a prison here. It isn't that bad. So somehow this is working, and it's like we're tolerating it, but it's like you have to figure out what in the world is going on here. And then when you try to tell other people about what you found, they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I can't see that. So you have to kind of put your worldview back together again into something that fits and not come out on the other side believing the earth is flat or whatever, because then, you know, you didn't make it out.
Yeah, it's definitely a process. And then, God forbid, you go back to Waco. 9/11 was bad enough, but in Waco, yeah, you have in real time our government murdering little children. Real time, right there. I mean, it was that one gets to me every time.
Well, they killed a million people in Iraq.
Yeah, after that, of course. Yeah, yeah, but yeah, Yeah, it was
Man.
it's intense, but why don't we get to the audience? I
This is
have
another good subject. Let's go to the audience. But that is another good subject, actually, is one of the things I'm actually working on a lot is to try to kind of extrapolate how does this work? We have the shadow at the individual level, my personal darkness, but then we have this collective kind of what Paul Levy calls Wetiko, right?
your book,
And to
you
try.
associate with the Kelepath, which is spot on. Yeah, this is
Yeah, you have to kind of try to figure out, how does this apply culturally too? So it's a big puzzle.
yeah, I was reading Hegel and his definition of evil. He said, evil is whatever advocates for the total good, for the complete good. I was like, well, that's
Oh.
perfect. Yeah, the ones who want the good for everyone, that's evil.
Those are your psychopaths,
Any
right?
questions, Vance? You want to start? Do you have a question since you were there last?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, okay. In that case, what's evil? What's good is good. What's evil?
Greater
Is
good.
evil that the total, the people that want everything to be evil? The other way around?
Yeah, it sounds like he's kind of joking.
Yeah. But,
No, that's really what Hegel said, and it makes sense. I mean, the demiurge, what is the demiurge? He wants the perfect organized hierarchical world. And the Lord of the Rings, Sauron, what was his goal? He wanted an organized world. He thought there was too much chaos with the elves and the gods, and he's like, I can make the perfect organ, Agent Smith, the perfect
Right.
world that we
This
live.
is what the ego wants to do.
Yeah, and that's what
The ego wants.
obviously, yeah, Cheney, Bush. They want this perfect. Unfortunately, in this perfect world, they're slightly higher than us, but
Yeah.
Well, they have to raise themselves up as tyrants in order to make everybody
There you go.
conform to what they're good
Yeah.
and
For the
think
greater
they're
good.
totally
It's
un
for the greater good, Vance.
and they're
Yeah.
totally unconscious, right? They're not, they can't, they, you put Dick Cheney or one of those neocons in this conversation. They'd just be lost. They're like, they don't want to do any shadow work. If they did that, they would find all kinds of horrors. So, they're unconscious. They're basically just going. It's like Jung talked about how that when you identify with a group, then as a group, the individuals can do things that are much more shadowy or primal than what, as a group, they can do those things than what they could individually. Individually, you couldn't pull off just grabbing somebody off the street and stabbing them in the neck or whatever. But collectively, as a group, you could go to war with people and you could shoot a million people that way, right? So the group consciousness, he says, is actually lower. It's more at like the level of an animal.
Well, that may be true for some or a lot of them, but I think there are actually people that become so comfortable with their shadow, they become their shadow, and that they have no problem
Oh.
perpetrating on people. And they know it, you know?
You're right, Vance. That's identification with your shadow. You're right. That is that there's a actual psychological understanding of that. Yes, it's true.
Yeah, those are the top leaders.
So in other words, Cheney or whatever. So he's kind of just sitting there going, seething, lying to everybody, knowing he's lying and saying, "This is good. I like doing this. This is great. These fools, they need to be lied to."
The shadow has integrated him instead of he integrating the shadow.
That's what, right. That's what it is.
I
But
grew up with the Democratic Party, age
yeah.
of McGovern and Bobby Kennedy, civil rights movement, anti-war movement, and then all
Yeah.
of a sudden here, it's so disillusioning to see the Democratic Party of today that
Oh.
is now perpetrating a genocidal war in Gaza, for example, and then in Ukraine we pushed NATO right up Putin's butt, to the point of where he felt like just to defend his country, he had to invade Ukraine and keep NATO out. And, and people in Washington, D.C. are going, oh, yay, we're killing a lot of Russians. Isn't this wonderful in this war, And what a shadow that is. And
It
then
is.
with the Marianne Williamson campaign, we realize how repressive the Democratic Party is. You know, it's not enough to be the incumbent president, have all the power of the incumbency. We have to step on everybody who just steps out of line, like Marianne Williamson and Bobby Kennedy, driven out of the party. And, you know, if you help these people like Williamson, we're going to never do business with you again, that type of thing, you know. And,
and then
during
culture,
the COVID era, you know, we had the Virality Project, which collected data on who was the worst disseminators of misinformation. And then you had Biden then repressing them through the social media and kicking them off Facebook and everything like that. And now in Harris, for example, in her campaign, just the other day, she kicked a Muslim out of, you know, she invited all these Muslims to come. And this one Muslim guy who ran for Congress in Detroit, got to the conference, he had pre-registered for it, and he didn't wear any insignia or anything. He had a suit coat on, didn't say anything loud or anything, but they just pulled him out of his chair and said, "No, we're taking you out of here. You know, we're not going to give you any reason." And then he went outside, and the police officer said, "Yeah, you have to leave now, or I'm going to throw you in the back of the car." You know,
right?
And so that's how we treat Muslims in this country, I guess, in this party.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if are we going to get into politics?
We're getting heavy, we better stick to the shadow. Anybody have a question to do with the shadow integration?
Yeah. I'd like to actually, since you called on me, come up with a real question, because I just remarked about good is evil, evil is good, or whatever. But so we're going to do shadow work, and presumably the motivation for doing the shadow work is that we're uncomfortable about something, that something's bothering us, right? And yet, in order to do the shadow work, we have to become uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. To look at all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So would you say, are we trading one form of discomfort for another, or is the discomfort in doing the shadow work supposed to be a temporary medicine for, and we're supposed to be less comfortable, uncomfortable later?
Yes, exactly. We're taking some yucky medicine now so that we won't fall apart when, you know, 20, 30 years from now.
Also,
you know, because
so we don't make
that's
others,
what happens.
So
yeah,
we don't make others uncomfortable too. You know, by
you're probably not, most people are not going to start looking at this and going, okay, do I need to do shadow work? What is that? You know, how do I do this and all that kind of stuff in unless they're in some kind of a circle where they're looking at healing modalities, right? And so people probably just gravitate towards healing modalities. They gravitate towards meditation or Eastern practices or maybe some psychedelics or whatever, because they recognize that, you know, how in whatever way they're suffering, whether they have, you know, psychosomatic symptoms or whether they have continual relationship breakups, or relational abuse, or they're depressed, they're constantly anxious, they can't sleep well, they have terrible dreams, nightmares all the time. You know, whatever the deal is, they're suffering, and they've been suffering for a while. And then they basically get to the point where, you know, the universe provides them this information and says, okay, this is what you need to do. And so, because at that point, there's no, you know, ignoring it, ignoring it is not really that much a good of an option anymore. Just drinking or taking substances or just, you know, whatever addiction is not really making the suffering go away. And so at some point you have to say, okay, I have to do this uncomfortable, I have to take this uncomfortable, this medicine, take this, do these uncomfortable practices, because I not only is, well, with some of these practices, you actually get pretty quick relief. You know, you start doing this stuff and you gut up and do it, you're going to get relief quickly. And then the real deeper stuff, you know, you're going to find out that it goes deep, deep, deep. And you're going to find out that it takes a lot longer to work through some of these bigger things where you basically have these kind of stories, you know, these kind of long-term patterns in life. And you're going to find they're related to your parents and ancestors and stuff. And you're going to be kind of digging at that for a while. But some of the stuff that's giving, you know, the reasons why you're taking, why you have an addiction or why you're breaking up with your partners all the time or fighting with them all the time, you're going to find that you're going to be able to work a lot of that out, you know, in a few years. So it's either do that or just become a totally miserable, shriveled up, cynical asshole or a victim, you know? So it's kind of like
bad health. Your body, you'll just have really bad.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of trauma is stored.
Yeah, man. You just fall apart physically and then you'll go to the doctor and they'll be like, you know, they will just give you more, to feed your story, your victimhood story or whatever you're telling yourself.
Shadow dancing as Andy Gibb sang. And speaking of somebody who did not integrate a shadow, we know what happened to him. So.
Who is it?
No choice
with the shadow. I mean, we have the expression, got to fight fire with fire. Sometimes you got to fight the shadow with the shadow. I mean, look at the Nazi Party, the shadow, what was going on in that society. And yet the Allies had to get together and they had to apply their shadow to fight the Nazi shadow. I mean, it was shadow. Mm. Going on both sides. You can't get away from it in this world. And to do nothing, that's...
Well, okay. So that you're... I hear you, what you're saying, but that's a certain level of playing the game. And at that level, that is how the game is played. But there are higher levels of playing the game. It's just that the society hasn't gotten there yet.
To not play, then it is annihilation.
So this is where we talked about this actually in the earlier interview with Miguel. This is where you get into the Eastern or Buddhist idea of right action. And here's where you recognize, and if you can combine right action with the Jungian understanding of the shadow and how that we're all engaged in collective shadow projection, then you can take action. When somebody else is, if you know, the Nazis are attacking us, right? But we don't have any of that Nazism in ourselves. Then we're not going to overreact and turn into Nazis ourselves. But since we do have that in ourselves, we go ahead and go into overkill mode and we burn everyone alive, right? So... like Dresden or whatever, or however we do it all over, or we drop atomic bombs, not on just on one city in Japan, but on two cities in Japan, right? So if we didn't have that demonism in us, well, then we would just act in a measured way to protect ourselves from this outside threat, but we wouldn't actually add fuel to the fire. But that is what we do. Because we're not self-aware. We don't know how we're projecting. We don't know how we're projecting as individuals or as groups. We don't know how our whole society basically is partially surviving on the fact that we consistently dump our internal entropy, our collective shadow, into the rest of the world. And that
I agree,
all
the anti-shadow is restraint. But I know there's so many different perspectives on history and what goes on and everything. It's tough though to play the game, and I agree. Restraint is definitely a critical factor in self awareness and keeping ourselves.
If the leaders were doing this at work, if the leaders were Jungians, if the leaders could be like, okay, you know, if they had been doing this on themselves, if they had been maturing themselves psycho-spiritually, then when people are coming in and saying, you know, annihilate those motherfuckers, wipe them out, turn the Middle East turn it into a parking lot or whatever it is, then the leaders would come in and say, no, here's what our ethics here, here's what our morals are, here's what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. We're going to protect ourselves, but we're not going to kill innocent people for no reason. Then you would get all the other followers, people going, okay. Or they would overthrow that leader and they would say, you're a pussy, get out of here, we're going to go kill him. That happens too.
He was too... much of a pacifist in some people's eyes.
Who was?
Mahatma Gandhi.
Right. Or JFK. The CIA thought he was too much of a pacifist, so get rid of him.
Yeah, but at the same time, look at Lech Walesa and those who made the Soviet Union fall. One of the most powerful empires in the world almost violently collapsed.
Yeah, you know, No, no, you're the solidarity movement in Poland. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and also other countries all over East Germany. There was a concerted movement that wildfire.
Yeah, there was an actual peace movement at that time.
South Africa too, apartheid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now
I think you're triggering my shadow. I just want to thank you for that.
I have an observation and a question then. I noticed that group collective action, it allows the individual to feel absolution and also false virtue. And I see that as a fundamental part of this problem. Yes. The other one that I had is, where in your work, every so often I'll be doing the shadow work and I'll find something that is external. It is my perception that's triggering me, but the cause of it, like man's injustice against other men, you know, and it's the, what is your recipe for when you hit something that, you know, it is your perception, but the cause is external and you can't source it within yourself. Tag.
Yeah. Right. Where you've noticed that there is an objectivity to evil. And it is in us, it is in humanity, and it is out there, and it is doing, it is moving about and doing what it's doing, and it is taking us all for a ride, and it's greater than your ability to do anything about at the individual level. And this is where you have to come to basically an accept. You can do what you can do at your level, at your, you know, your level of activism. And hopefully your activism will be as conscious of your own tendency to project as possible. But you will have to accept that evil, and we could define it if you want to, but evil is loose in the world, and it is an element of the collective human psyche, and that it's not going anywhere.
I wanted to ask you about what you were saying earlier, how we find out about what's really going on in the world, 9/11, mm-hmm. and how we've been lied to and mm-hmm. how we've been exploited. We develop a sense of outrage about it. How do we know when we have a genuine outrage versus projecting? Can we distinguish between our legitimate outrage and our projection?
Let's say, for example, using the example of 9/11, and we became outraged by what we saw as, you know, the attackers from overseas, and then we wanted to go to Afghanistan. Is that what you mean, kind of that example? We were outraged, right, on 9/11. Well, one of the things that we can do, because we're all here more aware of kind of how these deviants in power, how they play with us. But when you see outrage being generated or fueled through the media and through the political class, then that's kind of a signal or a key, a sign that maybe if you go along with that movement, your energy might be misdirected, right? You see what I'm saying there, right? That's one thing we can do, is not allow our legitimate outrage to be misdirected by a deviance who want us to, you know, refocus it over here. Because it could have been, the outrage could have been, well, wait a minute, we thought that you had this $1 trillion infrastructure that was supposed to protect us, and you failed. And okay, so 19 jerk-offs did this, but it happened because of you guys, and we're getting rid of all of you. You're supposed to be protecting us. Let's get rid of you. instead of getting rid of the whole Middle East, let's get rid of the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the Pentagon, and whoever's running these things that failed us. That could have been the direction of our outrage, but it was misdirected over to where the neocons wanted it to go, right?
Yes, they fuel it. Yeah, they fuel our outrage, and they seem to feed off of it.
They do, yeah. Yeah. So I guess it's, back to kind of right action or whatever, you know, our emotions have evolved over millions of years, and they're there for a reason, and they work. And so there's nothing objectively wrong about being outraged or having anger or wanting to, seek justice. There's just nothing wrong with that. It's just that when our own projections get involved, and then we, our activism or our behavior is misdirected into the wrong place for our own reasons or because we're being misled, I guess that's where we have the problem.
Yes. And how many videos do we need to see of Trudeau making a fool of himself or Biden making a fool of himself or Trump before we realize that perhaps we're just falling into a trap here, you know, that we're being stirred up. We're not thinking straight. It's in,
don't you
like
think,
martial arts. You don't want to be reactive to your opponent.
So when you study this, like you have been, and you're trying to understand what is the public psychology, why people are not getting it when they've seen their leaders lie to them, misdirect them over and over and over again, and yet they still put them in office or allow them to stay in office and stuff, and you start to study this and you go, what is this? Do people have Stockholm syndrome? Are people at a psychological level of childhood to where it's kind of like how a child cannot think badly about their own parents because their parents are actually there to they require their parents for survival, and so they are sort of precluded from demonizing their parents until they get to a certain age? Are we at that level to where we are psychologically precluded from demonizing our leaders because they're our surrogate parents? Is that what it is? I mean, these are the questions that show up, right?
Yes.
You know, that's an interesting idea, this idea of mass psychosis and if we're being played by both sides. So Rene Girard wrote a book called Violence and the Sacred. And what he concludes in that book is that when groups come together, a mimesis, so the human is we imitate. So you can see this in children. You know, mom, he's copying me. Tell him to stop, right?
Right.
And as we grow older, we manage that. But what Rene Girard says in this book is that it is possible to get a group of people in a psychotic state of hysteria, in which he calls it mimetic violence.
Mm.
And this mimetic violence is runaway violence. And it's triggered by both sides imitating each other. So Trump says something derogatory, and Kamala says something just as derogatory. And of course, the Democrats hate on the Republicans, and Republicans are hating on the Democrats. And what occurs is this mimetic violence is triggered, and it's unstoppable. And right. The way it was stopped is through sacrifice. So what happens?
Oh, wow!
The
fantastic.
The phenomenon is that at once and the same time, so just before the sacrifice, the victim is evil, and then the sacrifice is sacrificed, and right after the sacrifice, then the victim becomes divine. And that phenomenon brings people together. So it through sacrifice, order is restored. Now, if you start looking at, for example, the Avistas, or if you look at Judaic belief in Tikkun Olam, Zoroastrian belief in what's known as Frashkart. Frashkart is evil destroys evil. And how does that happen, right? The restoration of man in Tikkun Olam, where you enter into this Negredo that's hollow and black and cold, but you don't penetrate through to the other side because then you go into nothingness. But there is something behind, I don't know who the gentleman that said it, where we're being played. Mm-hmm. And it's coming to a boiling point. And if you look at, for example, not to step over any lines here, but if you look at the quarter of the globe that has been, disproportionately visited by outsiders, it's Western Europe, mm-hmm. and it's the United States. And mm-hmm. what we have now is an element within Western Europe and the United States that don't particularly assimilate with, things the way they have been. They're kind of bringing their things, and they're bringing a hatred, right, towards whites in particular, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's jumping the shark to say that, and you'd have to read René Girard's book, Violence and the Sacred, because he essentially concludes that the sacred is violent.
Violence can be sacred. Because
sacred is violent, right?
You mean the totality of that which is sacred is violence?
Well, yeah. So there's a book. It's called The Idea of Holy by mm-hmm. Rudolf Otto. And in this book, The Idea of Holy, holy is defined as both fascination and terror. Mm-hmm. Is the way and from what I have read, kind of across the board, whether it's Dostoevsky or Schopenhauer or Hegel or Nietzsche or even in great literature, mm-hmm. this idea of being fascinated and terrified at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. You fall in love with a beautiful woman, not only are you mm-hmm. fascinated with the beautiful woman, but mm-hmm. you're also terrified at the prospect.
Right.
And it occurs once in the same time. So René Girard does make the argument that the sacred is violent and that it's only
or terrifying, let's say, right?
Right. It's terrifying. It's dread. Mm-hmm. It's this idea of dread, mm-hmm. a profound dread, right? Like your mm-hmm. your soul is being wrenched mm-hmm. out of you, right?
Mm-hmm. Look at the crucifixion from an, of from Jesus. A, the zenith of Christianity is a horrible, violent act. The perfect sacrificial person to society.
Right, and if you don't do these sacred acts, you're going to hell.
Well, yeah, but I think you touched on it early on about the Negredo, right? And I think mm-hmm. it's a scalable idea. I think this idea of sacrifice is also a scalable idea. So Jesus, yes. The story of Jesus is about sacrifice, right? But it's a scalable idea, and I think. So the Cheneys and the Bushes and the Putins and all global leaders, right? I refuse mm-hmm. to accept that these ideas aren't understood by them. I cannot accept it. And if a person okay. got into kind of these ideas, so that there aren't autonomous countries and there aren't autonomous political parties, and that the mob is being played by both sides in order mm-hmm. to drive this mimetic violence to make a sacrifice and then to bring order mm-hmm. after the sacrifice concluded.
I think if you would send me some of your references or some of those books that you mentioned, I'm with you on this. I think that's plausible, actually. And if you look at some of the secret society rituals and stuff like that, I think that's actually that there are players who understand that the only way their order can come in is through a sufficient and properly orchestrated sacrifice. I think that's plausible.
Well, it's an ancient motif. Look at the Hebrew idea of the scapegoat.
I was going to say
the Yom Kippur. Your shadow on the goat, your shadow, yep. And give it to Azazel to be eaten. So it is shadow work, just
you're exactly right. You're exactly right, Miguel. In fact, Rene Girard gets into a lengthy discussion on scapegoating.
It's in the Jungian literature a lot too, and so sacrifice is in the Jungian literature a lot too. A lot of Jungians try to pull that apart and try to figure that out too, but pertaining to the whole new world order and all that kind of stuff, I think it's definitely worth thinking about.
I was going to say the Yom Kippur one. The one I was going to mention is, I think, one of their biggest tools that allows them to pull the rug over people's eyes is the pain and discomfort so many people have from uncertainty, that they would much rather have a leader who gives them a certain answer, even if that answer is wrong, rather than continue to exist in a state of uncertainty with an I don't know.
Yeah.
And because of that pain, they'd rather jump to a wrong answer.
Okay. Yeah, Freud did say that was humanity's greatest fear, uncertainty. We can't, and for survival as animals, it makes sense because we don't have wings, we don't have claws, we need to kind of know who's behind the bushes or who's
right.
So, yeah, from an evolutionary stance, it makes sense.
It makes sense. Now, if you have a proper initiation master who's telling you, okay, you're involved in an initiation here, you're going to be disoriented. This is how it works. And on the other side, you're going to be rebuilt. If you have leadership that can explain that properly, then people will understand, okay, this is a period of disillusionment and dissociation and... it's part of the way we evolve, but we don't have that information's being withheld or it's not known.
Yeah.
Do you think there's an end to shadow work?
An end?
An end to shadow work?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it an kind of endless black hole where you can ever go deeper?
I could answer that by saying, if you use the depth psychological map of the psyche, right, where you have the ego and unconscious boundary. So you've got everything that's in the conscious mind, everything you're aware of in the ego, so to speak, and then everything below that in the unconscious. And that the ego is the sort of space in which it's the rational organized space of the psyche, and then we superimpose it onto the world. We superimpose the ego onto the world, and we make rational organized societies that way. And that we're constructed that way. That's just a fact. That's how it works. But then everything that's not allowable in society or allowable in the ego, because it's ancient, it's primal, it comes from our primate heritage and all of that, that doesn't have a place in the ego or in the organized world. And so it has to go somewhere, because if we didn't have organized societies and we just had, chaotic anarchy and stuff and just reverted back to kind of an animal state, even they don't have anarchy. But if we did that, then maybe we wouldn't have a shadow. But since we have organized societies and we have the personal equivalent, the ego, and by definition, it cannot handle all the shadow material. It cannot handle our primal violence, sexual drives, you know, greed and selfishness, and you know, it's not allowable in the moral conscious ego or in society. So it has to go somewhere. So that's where that's what it does. And so the ego just puts up a shield of cognitive dissonance and pushes all that primal stuff back down into the unconscious. And then it finds a workaround somehow. And there's all kinds of ways that we do the workaround, but the projection and displacement onto other people and organized wars and stuff like that, you know, that's a big way that we do it, or we just kind of fall unconscious and then we just do the things that we didn't want to do. You know, we get hooked on a substance or whatever, and then we say, I don't remember doing that. I was drunk, or I was on, I see my video went out. I'll fix that in a minute. You know, and so we just, you know, there's all kinds of ways in which our shadow makes its way out into the world surreptitiously. And this is what you could say, back to the subject of evil, that evil is the behavioral result of the shadow. It is the behavioral output of the human shadow. So, is there an end to shadow work? We would have to evolve a better way of integrating or displacing our primal nature. Or we would have to evolve into another type of being that's not built on a monkey body. You know what I mean? Because as long as we are operating on top of an ape, a baboon body or whatever we are, then we have all that baboon stuff. You should look at baboon wars, and baboons and other primates can be just as brutal, if not more so, than humans. And so we have all this primal stuff, and it just can't go into society, or we would destroy society. So it has to find some way out. So I don't think there's, in the foreseeable future, an end to shadow work, because it's just kind of, the shadow is part of it's the natural entropy that's created out of human consciousness. It's like there has to be some kind of garbage that our psyche creates just by its nature. There has to be some kind of entropic output. And that's the shadow, or it manifests as evil. And so, no, I don't think there's an end to shadow work in the foreseeable future. That's just where my thinking is now on it. But
as long as there's light, there's going to be shadow. It's a cosmic law. Gods, humans, it doesn't matter. So,
yeah.
Yang, I didn't make the rules. So I just work here. No, anyway, we better wrap it up. We're about 20 minutes past the hour. Some great questions, great comments, Colin. Great presentation. Are you behind the bars, the color bars? Is there a guy with a gun to your head? Is that why you turned it off?
I'll just put the
He's being dragged away from the studio. Oh my God.
Hold on just a second. I'll put a battery in.
Battery. I was going to say somebody tripped over the camera plug.
Yeah, that's one of my cats who does that all the time. So.
Yeah, there it is. It's coming back now. Right. Okay. Well, we started a little late as well.
Yeah. We've gone about an hour and 10 minutes, so that's good. So yeah, really appreciate you coming on, Colin.
My pleasure. Anytime you want to do it, this subject can go on for a long time. There's so many, and some of you guys had some amazing questions, and I really appreciate that. It's every one of these kind of deep questions just is a great challenge to unfold and go, okay, well, how could that be? And what do we do about it? And so I think the more conversations we can have about the shadow and its relation to evil, which is kind of what we've been talking about together, or shadow work, the better. I would really like to see this, you know, I mean, Jung was talking about this 80 years ago. He was saying, okay, everybody, here's my model. You know, prove me wrong. This is the way I think it works, and this is what I think you should do, you know, generally. And everybody was like, what? We can't hear you, huh? Who's speaking? You know, everybody just wanted to, because it's difficult.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.